If you have the inner knowing called faith, if you have the power and strength of character to put the necessary elements into proper operation, these things will be cancelled out in direct proportion to the amount of these diverse conjunctive relationships which you put into effect at the moment. Time is of no importance, but the development of the personal ego is of the utmost importance, and whether it takes 100 million years or 100 billion years, makes absolutely no difference in the eye of the infinite creative force. To you, therefore, who are groveling in your little pits of clay, look upward, for you shall find in spirit, understanding and knowing of which spirit is. This will be the lifting, compelling force which will elevate you from out of this pit and start you on your journey into the infinite cosmos. Chapter 4. In his journey through life, the average and earnest truth seeker is constantly presented with a number of seeming paradoxes. The differences between political and religious systems, scientific factions, various types of social structures and ways of life, all seem to present to this person certain insoluble or incompatible differences which are very difficult to equate and which, in spite of all efforts, remain unresolved in this person's own relationship to the physical world. To the average person, this situation may or may not resolve itself as differences in these diverse ways into such various psychic pressures which may actually create a neurotic or a psychotic condition in the mind of such a person, should he try to take these differences too seriously in the transmission of his daily life. To the truth seeker, these differences assume vast and various proportions which must be resolved and justified before evolutionary progress can be sustained in a positive direction. To say that the processes of solving these numerous differences, which are merely byproducts of time and the gradual assimilation of the various impacts of different civilizations and subsequent spiritual lives, is to follow the average evolutionary course of each individual, but eventually such an individual reaches a certain threshold where the natural reactionary processes of life are not sufficient to sustain the inward spiritual drive which is contained or sustained from the superconsciousness. When an individual reaches such a position in his evolutionary scale, he has then begun the journey which makes him ready for the complete emergence from life in the material planes as a material being, where he is subjected to the various reactionary processes of life. For this individual has become eager and longs for a life which can be more suitably equated in higher spiritual values. Some of these differences of life as opposed in the material worlds about us are contained in such seeming paradoxes existing between science and religion. While it is common knowledge that the average individual is prone to make superficial examinations of various values and to equate judgments thereon, yet such a course is fallacious. In no way or manner should any person arrive in an analysis of some difference in his daily life without taking into consideration that such things contain an infinite number of ramifications with spiritual planes in which every individual is more or less directly connected. The scientist may, in his own way, be superficially trying, to all appearances, to destroy the whole and complete religious system by denying the existence of such supernatural phenomena as miracles and numerous other sustaining pillars of concept as they are contained in the various religious documentaries. The scientist, contrary to all appearances in this so-called destruction, is not actually so minded but is trying to prove in his own way the true, actual existence of his knowledge of the infinite, as it is contained in the atom and in various other energy transmissions with which he is familiar. In this way, he is in some subconscious manner, relating himself to his higher superconscious self which lives in a dimension of relationship with the infinite which has assumed some sort of a practical term of interpolation wherein he can see in mathematical equations, configurations and such other impedimenta of his scientific world, direct translations of spiritual infinity as he knows of them in the higher moments of his lives between earth lives. In this sense then, the scientist can actually be said to have developed somewhat further along the line of his evolution than his religionist contemporary who is, from the pulpit or from the Bible, trying to express age-old and altered to the modern idiom of the times, various deifications as they concern the mystical forces which move about him. The religionist also is relating subconsciously into his higher self, specific knowledge and certain pertinent relationships with the higher infinite mind of God, which he has not as yet learned to equate in mathematical formulae or into such structural forms as atoms. To this religionist, the infinite mind is still resolving itself into somewhat of the unknown and mystical qualities which formerly endowed it with the various propensities as it appeared in the different pantheologies and paganisms from his past lifetimes. However, the cardinal sin, if it can be called such, which has been committed, is that in both cases, whether the scientist or the religionist, the most definite and emphatic emphasis has always been placed upon the material side of life. Both the scientist and the religionist have been trying to equate to their fellow men the whole and complete infinite cosmogony in terms of finite third-dimensional relationships in more or less reactionary measures as they are contained either in the test tube or in the Bible. In this way too, it can be fully justified that the scientist or the religionist is still indulging in some form or another of an ancient paganism as it has been expressed in numerous past lifetimes. The scientist has deified the atom, his mathematical formula, to the exclusion of all else. He has relegated the infinite, so far as his exterior consciousness is concerned, into these numerous reactionary theses as opposed in his textbooks and which are workable in the laboratory. Likewise, the religionist is committing the same type of idolatry and cardinal sin in his expressions and translations of the infinite mind, for even in modern religious systems which are called Christian, but are basically pagan in nature, God is still an exterior configuration who dwells in some celestial and nebulous mansion. This is a sort of development, a white-robed Santa Claus, which has evolved from the pages of history from such ancient personages and characters as were carved in stone or cast in bronze and gold and worshipped by the multitudes. This is in direct contradiction to the context of the Gospel as it was preached by Jesus of Galilee, in which Jesus stressed so emphatically, and which fortunately has not been deleted from modern biblical translations, that the all-important concept to the individual is his relationship with the infinite. It is all concept and must take place from within the individual himself and not from some exterior or some superficial values which may be posed in his immediate environment. This then, is the threshold of true spiritual expansion. It is the point or the beginning, which Buddha called Nirvana, in which the existence of the soul of man can be fully justified as living in spiritual dimensions without the seemingly necessary vehicle of the human body. In this way then, basically, whether scientist or religionist or those who are more or less sitting across the fence and might in common terminology be called atheists but, large or small, whatever may be their particular relationship to this life, as long as they remain materialists and try to resolve the common equations of the infinite mind into common equivalents of reactionary values in their daily life, they can be considered paganistic in their attitude of life, and as such, they are indulging in the age-old evolutionary pattern of life which can be referred to as idolatry. People today, in our modern world, are just as paganistic in nature as they were thousands of years ago except, of course, their idolatry has taken on new and more modern forms of expressions. We find idolatry, or worship to the exclusion of the higher spiritual values, appearing on the surface of life in many different forms and ways. Whether it is in the worship of new automobiles, home furnishings, or bedecking the person with new clothes, mink stoles or whatever particular type of idolatry we may see in these various expressions of life about us. 2. The teenager has his own particular type of idolatry, just as does the more mature advanced person. No one, old or young, male or female is completely immune to these various forms of idolatry as they sweep about us expressing themselves in our daily lives. The churchgoer is just as guilty of idolatry as were the Israelites who bowed down to worship the golden calf when Moses was on Mount Sinai. Likewise is the man or woman who makes the art of making money his daily fetish, their sum and total of daily insecurities, as they are posed from various negative subconscious inflictions, makes an aggregate of various negative indispositions which culminate in a frenzied, frantic scramble for the so-called necessities of life. This, in itself, poses one of the greatest of all paradoxes, for in the infinite cosmos there is an abundance of everything. Each person, individually can, on the basis of introspection, look infinitesimally small and be much less than the common atoms of which his body is composed. Therefore, living in this infinite sea of energy which pulsates, radiates and vibrates about him in this superabundant cosmogony with an abundance of everything which man needs for his daily life, he is constricted in his pattern of life by this mad scramble for survival. This too, in its modern form, is simply an evolution in which possibly the same man who is now sitting in the swivel chair of a banker's office was just a few thousand years ago, a primitive savage with a stone axe stalking his prey through the jungle. While conditions and manners of expression have greatly changed, the basic principle for survival is still the ulterior motive in all of his daily actions and, altruistically speaking, the higher motivating spiritual values have finally vaguely begun to manifest themselves into his spiritual life in such a manner and form that he will drop a dollar bill on the plate in his church. Who can say, then, in viewing the race of mankind, existing on the earth today, that even in his most advanced form of living, he is not the much vaunted and developed creature which he presupposes himself to be? His bump of approbation must constantly be massaged with daily applications of ego salve which he administers to himself in order that he may survive and re-inflict the burden of his karmic existence from one day to the next. From all corners of the land, all ways and reaches on the earth's surface comes the inharmonious, blatant bleat of the multitudes in their various sins and iniquities, crying out for relief, for salvation and for some basic equivalent of security in their seemingly insecure world and in the existence in which they live. People who basically have not yet developed beyond the age of childhood and who daily express themselves in such common relationships which are quite childlike and elemental in nature, strangely enough have become the focusing point of certain systems of idolatries which are practiced in the world today. We see, for instance, in our American way of life and in the entertainment world, people who would, in the ordinary manner and way of life, remain totally unknown, for basically they are people with little, if any, talent beyond the ordinary values of what might be called the expressive way of life. These people clutter up the airwaves of the different electronic devices, such as radio, television and the theater with their blatant and nefarious portrayals of the various emotional and reactionary ways of life. In this way, sex is the predominating influence which is expressed in all of these various entertainment portrayals. Second, but by no means lagging very far behind, is the old destructive attitude of life which has portrayed itself in many of the bloodiest pages of history, the destruction of one man by another. For murder rides hand in glove with sex down the air lanes and throughout the various halls of portrayal in our entertainment world. Here we find the craven cowards enjoying these different expressions, these cowards of their own selves, people who are still living in the fears, the haunts, the insecurities of their former lives, the shadows of the images of people they have killed, destroyed, looted and plundered in former times are still stalking the hallways of their memories. Then too, because of certain law enforcement systems, these people who would otherwise be quite prone to go out and practice their various nefarious affiliations with past lives have now, by common sense, been restrained from so doing because they know that this would inevitably bring about a complete cessation of their lifetime activities. This also adds to the burden of pressure as it is posed in their various psychic centers relating to these different expressions of past lives. It is quite natural, therefore, that these people should at least seek some sort of a palliative to relieve these pressures. This they can do by finding in their common entertainment world an expression wherein people publicly, legally and lawfully can portray to their patronage the destructive arts which have been banned from those who are viewing them. Here again in our objectivism, this condition carries a fair measure of warning. The old cliché that like begets like is based upon our understanding of frequency relationships. As Jesus expressed it, bread cast upon the waters returns tenfold. And again we have that common understanding of frequency relationship and the combination of harmonic creation. Chapter 5. To express a good and constructive thought, whether or not it is followed by an action, means this good and constructive thought, as a definite waveform, has behind it the potential of consciousness and is psychokinetically projected into the infinite cosmos. There, in frequency relationship, it finds an infinite number of waveforms which are compatible to it in nature and also good in nature, which can be considered constructive. Therefore, this thought regenerates a certain harmonic structure which, in turn through cyclic patterns, regenerates itself on the surface of the life of the individual who first cast the good and constructive thought into the ethers. This same principle holds true of people who cast negative thoughts into the infinite, and here is a measure of warning. Thought without action is just as potent as if the action had been committed. To commit adultery mentally is just as much of a sin as actually to perpetrate the sin in a physical sense. The idea behind all such manifestations is that these things usually enslave the perpetrator to the exclusion of all constructive ideologies, forms and manifestations. Here again we find that common linkage through frequency relationship, not only to the infinite cosmos but to an infinite number of people who are or who have committed such nefarious or negative relationships in their life. These negative thoughts, in turn, will regenerate those harmonic structures which are ever increasingly negative in nature and which, through cyclic patterns and frequency relationship, will regenerate themselves on the surface of the life of the individual who first cast them into the infinite. Thus we see the beginning of both a spiritually good person and a very vile or evil person, and it can truly be said to be the beginning, or the end. The average individual on the face of the earth who is neither so negatively biased nor positively biased that he expresses a preponderance of either one or the other of these relationships in his daily life is not lost, nor is he without cause. This person, if given all the benefit of the doubt, will usually evolve after millions of years into a constructively minded participating element in the infinite cosmogony. For the present then, we can look upon him and easily justify and forgive him in whatever particular transgressions he may be committing against our sense of decency and justice. We can overlook his beer, his sex and his cigarettes, his selfishness, his grasping attitudes and know, in the development of the superego consciousness, he will attain that metamorphosis in the future eons of time, providing of course, that some particular affiliation or a preponderance of negative force does not turn the direction of his progress from the upward to the downward trail. To each one, therefore, who is a truth seeker, may we say, do not lose sight of the fact that you will be forever tempted with the preponderance of false values as they are posed in your own relationship to yourself. Jesus was tempted by the devil in the parable in the New Testament, but factually speaking, this temptation actually existed with this master for many hundreds, or possibly many thousands of years. It was a daily temptation to be reckoned with constantly and necessitated Jesus living in constant alertness and vigilance, so at no time would he be committing an act which could be justified as being selfish in nature. After learning of spiritual wisdom, if he had used the great powers which were his for his own selfish purpose, he would have automatically, and at that moment, turned his flight and progression from the upward to the downward path. The false systems of various idolatries as we find them about us in the world today, are very serious defects in the transmission of our way of life in the various levels of social structures in which we find ourselves, for idolatries and various idols always have the same nefarious and undermining effect upon the spiritual anatomy of the superconsciousness. In the oscillating process, as it is concerned with the exterior surface of a person's life and with the interior or the psychic self, as it has lived in other lifetimes, unless these things are constantly and positively biased in complete spiritual retrospection, analogously, these various oscillations can then be considered negative in nature and, as such, destructive. They can also be called systems of idolatry. For idols always have a tendency to focus the consciousness of the person from the interior to the exterior. It is this exterior world, the world of reaction with which the person is basically involved in leaving behind, in his upward flight into the infinite. Be not afraid, therefore, to substitute higher spiritual values for what might seem, at the moment, to be apparent substantial physical values of relationship, even though the exchange of the higher spiritual concepts seem, in a sense or at that moment, to have no supporting means nor even to have a functional relationship. But in all cases, such particular relationships and their subsequent substitutions will, in future evolutions of time, come to mean the actual difference between constructive evolution and a downward plunge into the abysmal reaches of the subastral worlds. The reactionists, the scientists and the religionists who cannot or who do not translate their way of life and that of their fellow men into the elements of life which are directly connected in a scientific and fully justified manner with the infinite, are hopelessly lost within themselves until such junctions with this infinite consciousness can be constructively maintained on the surface of their future lives. This is also part of the age-old escape mechanism of spiritual healing, the long dreamed of and nebulous equation of a perfect way of life, the utopia, the Shangri-La, where sin and evil and all the various deleterious factions of life have been removed by some great spiritual faction or leadership. Such a condition is contrary to a true way of life, and at no time is any individual in such a position that he is not immediately confronted with all of the infinite problems and relationships of life as they are concerned in direct translations with his immediate life. For to be thus suspended and taken away from want and insecurity would in itself violate the most hallowed precincts of our evolutionary pattern of life, completely destroying the prime purpose of the creation of man and his relationship to the Creator. Life therefore can and always should be visualized as a constructive evaluation of equations in an infinite number of relationships. Primarily, all this must be by reason of the way, manner and form in which it is lived. For its creation is basically and essentially energy, or spiritual in nature. Therefore, man must always, if he is so constructively minded, live his pattern and transmission of life from a spiritually minded platform wherein he understands, to some degree, the numerous translations of life as they relate to energy waveforms, in that constructive and evolutionary process of the psychic body in conjunction with the higher self. To cry out to Jesus or to any spiritual healer, self-constituted or otherwise, is only a direct reversion into ancient paganisms and savage or barbaric customs, wherein some witch doctor or purveyor of so-called mystical powers was purveyed for a fee to the general public who so demanded his services. In the back reaches of the jungles today, we see savages wearing about their necks different charms which are concocted of weird and varied forms of animal and vegetable life. Their sole virtue lies only in the fact the wearer believes in them. The same system of idolatry is today contained and personified in many ways in our social structures. Perhaps so far as the religionist is concerned, he is wearing his Bible about his neck, just as the savage in the jungle wears his feathers and lion's claws about his neck. These things largely have been only developments and new adaptations of old forms and expressions. So, dear brother, if you find yourself in stringent circumstances, financial, physical, mental or otherwise, remember these things, in themselves, are all a direct result of your own creation. You spent thousands of years erecting this little wall of false ideas, associations and translations about you, so you now find yourself almost isolated from the infinite cosmogony. There is only one way to climb over this wall, to realize that it is within yourself and only you have the power to do so. In conjunction with the various spiritual attributes which you have acquired in your evolution and in the development of the superconsciousness, this could be a veritable bolt of lightning descending from heaven and, in one fell stroke, level that little wall you have erected around yourself. You would then find yourself freed from the trammel, the toil and the vicissitudes of the material implications in which you have so confounded yourself. This saving master, who so precipitated this great bolt, was the sum and total of all the good things which you had learned and compared, evaluated and equated, interwoven, polarized and biased, and which so positively minded you from your spiritual side of life. Look not, therefore, for your healing in the church, the temple or in the hospital. Your healing will come about directly after certain particular justifications have been made with the exterior surface of your life, called the physical, to the various interpolations of consciousness as they are contained in the superconsciousness which, in turn, oscillates infinitely into that constructive infinite mind which has been called God. Part 2. Chapter 6. In his search for truth and at different points in some particular lifetime, and we could consider the present life as an example, the average truth seeker may find himself more directly concerned with the outside world and the multitudes of people who inhabit these different countries with which he is connected. By some particular app or with the inner consciousness, he has been quickened or alerted to higher spiritual values, and these spiritual values, the knowledge of and the living in the spiritual worlds, have become a closer relationship to him. These things in themselves pose many and varied contrasts, some very striking in nature with the outside world in which he lives. He may thus become acutely aware of the various derelictions, suffering and other particular types of life which can be basically animalistic or reactionary in nature. Thus quickened or sensitized in seeing these varied contrasts, he may immediately wish in some way or manner to change the whole contour of the existing world. This may even be aided and abetted, in a sense, by a psychological equivalent known as an escape mechanism. The sum and total of the various psychic pressures which are oscillating in his psychic self, as they are so concerned and connected with negative indispositions of a destructive nature with past lifetimes, along with this particular quickening, as he is now so spiritually posed, only tend in a way to aid or to further the urgency of his need to see his fellow men changed in their seemingly mad rush to oblivion. In this way he accomplishes a twofold purpose. He can justify, to some degree, or he believes he can, the various spiritual beliefs and knowledge which he has acquired in higher worlds. He can also divert his attention subconsciously from the sense of his own guilts and iniquities. In this way, that particular individual often becomes quite unreasonable and even fanatical in his expression of life. He may find common union in such cultisms and various other religious expressions which are primarily motivated by the more fanatical expressions concerning man's interpolations of his daily life. Yes, it is not impossible to find in various churches of the country today, as well as in other religious systems existing in other lands, some very strange and weird customs which are always engendered by this common escape mechanism and the added quickening of the spirit to the higher sense of spiritual values. This person, either mildly or fanatically inclined to change the world, can become a real menace not only to himself but to everyone with whom he comes in contact. Not only is he prone to exaggerate the position of the world as it presently exists, but quite often the propaganda which he spreads finds sympathetic ears in people who have reached a common borderline but have not yet crossed into that nebulous threshold in which the fanatic is now revolving. This fanatical person will therefore find various and obtrusive manners and forms in which he can express the fanaticism and the escape from reality into some direction which completely detracts from his true constructive evolutionary course. We will find today, in this modern world, people who are worshipping in strange rituals not only such things as snakes and other forms of animal or vegetable life, but people who chase flying saucers and worship at the altars of the various movie idols in the entertainment world. These things, in themselves, can always be considered diversionary methods or manners of expression in the common escape mechanism. In the fanatic who assumes the religious role of a purveyor of a great truth, we again find a menace of a different sort and one which should be reckoned with. Should this fanatic be so obsessed that he can gather about him, either consciously or otherwise, a supporting band of astral entities, as is so often the case, who are also so fanatically inclined, through the subconscious reaches and infrequency relationship, they will often exert outwardly into the physical of that man's life a very strange and hypnotic influence which will reach into the lives and conduct of many people whom he contacts. We shall thus see the reason why people meekly or even hypnotically follow the leadership of some person who is obviously a psychopath in every sense, manner and form, who is obsessed not only with the idea of changing the way and manner of his followers, but also with the dethroning of every known precinct of consciousness in our social structures. Neither can it be said that these fanatics have any real or basic supporting platforms which could, in any sense of the word, give a new world or a justified reason for the change of manners or customs in the people whom they do contact. Usually these fanatics are quite barren in their own lives and upon close scrutiny will be found to possess feet of clay and who are, at the present time, standing upon pedestals of their own erection. When Jesus said, "By their fruits ye shall know them," he gave us a sort of slide rule or a common denominator wherein we could, in all phases and concepts of life, truly measure the worth of any particular one of our expressionary values. This one in particular was concerned with the spiritual values.